ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Bill Buckmaster Show, Tucson's most trusted voice for news information. I'm Ben Bueller Garcia, normally the host of the nationally syndicated American Warrior Radio Show, which can be heard locally right here on KVOI Saturdays at noon. We're broadcasting to you from the Green Thing Socolo Village studio. If you'd like to interact with us, give us a call on the Buckmaster Live Line. That's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The number is 520-790-2040. In the bottom half of the hour, we're going to talk monsoons and other weather-related stuff with Zach Guido from the Arizona Institute for Resilience. I don't know about you, but I'm glad that the monsoons seem to have finally showed up. We'll see what's going on behind that. But first, in case you missed the news, according to a press release issued by the Coconino County Health and Human Services Department, one of our fellow Arizonans died of the plague this month. Take a breath. We're not witnessing the return of the Black Death. There's actually an average of 7 human plague cases reported each year in the U.S. However, it's always good to stay informed, so we've invited David Engelhalter to come help us become better informed. David is the director and professor at TGen North. He's also a director of TGen's Division of Immunology and Microbial Genomics. It's not my first language, David. I hope you be patient to me. Prior to joining TGEM, Dave was the state epidemiologist for Arizona. David, welcome to the Buckmaster Show.
Thanks a lot, Ben. It's great to be here.
So like I said, it's not my first language, and we're going to be throwing out a lot of $5 words here today. So let's start with Engelhalter.
Engelhalter is good, like Neanderthaler.
Okay, so that's a good German name, perhaps.
There it is.
Okay, all right, now I've got that figured out. So, David, tell us more about TGen and what your organization does.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. It's good to be here this afternoon. So TGen, or otherwise known as the Translational Genomics Research Institute, is a nonprofit research institute in Arizona for a little over 20 years, about 22 years. In the Phoenix area, really focused on what's all the new knowledge we can get out of the Human Genome Project that occurred back in the late 90s, if you recall, and how do we develop new drugs, diagnostics, better tools to help our physicians treat patients, especially for chronic and complex diseases. About 17, 18 years ago, we started a new lab up in Flagstaff, Arizona, called TGen North, and that's really the infectious disease arm of this nonprofit, and it's really focused then on infectious disease genomics, so the DNA study of bacteria and viruses and fungi and those things that make us sick.
David, you on the website you talk about you've done a lot of research, to understand to advance our understanding of multi-drug resistant infections. Drug resistant. Is there a phrase that describes if something is completely ineffective, or is that drug resistant, or is there a, kind of clarify that gray area for me. If something's drug resistant, it's not good, but.
Yeah. I mean, there's drug resistant, there's multi-drug resistant, which means it's resistant to multiple drugs that we might use to treat the infection. Then there's something called XDR, or extremely drug resistant. Okay. And that's usually if it's resistant to three or more classes of drugs. So it's like very, very hard to treat. And there are some infections that we, especially with things like tuberculosis, that we do see pan resistance or just resistance to all known drugs. And thankfully those are rare, but they're the things that we really have to study the DNA of these organisms to understand, is there anything we can treat some of these infections with?
So in many ways, you're sort of the tip of the spear then in leading the charge on, okay, we don't have a cure or a pharmaceutical now, but we think we can get there. We'd like to get there on things like tuberculosis.
Yeah, we do actually do see ourselves sometimes as the tip of the spear for responding to a lot of these infections, whether it is how do we use the most advanced technologies to develop new diagnostic tools, new drugs, but also really importantly, to develop better public health systems. We didn't invent it, but we really built out a capability called genomic epidemiology, where we can actually get very precise information to know which two cases of a disease are actually related to each other. If they're, are they, is it part of a new growing outbreak? Be able to jump, identify and jump on outbreaks as soon as they start, whether that's in our hospitals or in our communities or our schools. And we do that a lot for the local public health departments here in Arizona, as well as state level and nationally too.
You know, David, anytime you put plague in the headline, you're going to grab some attention, and it certainly got my attention right off the bat. But then I read further down in the press release, and I mean, I feel for those seven cases annually, but that's not, that doesn't rise to the level of panic.
No, you're absolutely right. So actually, I spent a few years in the plague branch at CDC, so this is an area I know really well. Our biggest concerns on a national level was the fact that plague, the bacterium plague, was being used in bioweapons programs. And so there was a lot of money poured into that to make sure that we could respond to if there was a bioterrorism threat or something around that. But plague is in our backyard. The plague of old that we hear about, Black Death, it lives naturally in our environment, in the four corner states, up above typically 4,500, 5,000 foot of elevation, and it circulates in the rodents and fleas, and occasionally humans come in contact with that, pretty rarely, as you mentioned, and by and large, it's still mostly treatable when we get that form of the plague where we get bit by a flea, and then it causes what we call bubonic plague. It causes that very swollen lymph node, very visible, incredibly painful, but that's bubonic plague, and we can treat that almost every time as long as we start treatment appropriately.
Now, David, this most recent case here in Arizona was, as I understand, it was pneumonic plague. The Black Death was bubonic plague. Are there two different types of plagues, or is it really defined by how it manifests itself in the body?
Yeah, good point. It's really is the how it manifests itself.
Okay.
So during the Black Death, that really lasted from the 14th century to the 18th century, that was a combination of both bubonic and pneumonic. So pneumonic plague is when the plague bacteria either gets into your lungs because you breathed it in from another animal that had pneumonic plague, and this happens, or it just progresses. So you could get bubonic plague from a flea bite, and it just gets worse and worse in your system, works its way to your lungs, and then you develop this really terrible lung infection, and it could be then pneumonic plague. The problem is when that happens, we don't have typically good outcomes. Even with treatment, it's pretty much a 50-50 shot, and that's only if treatment starts early. If you don't have treatment starting early, we see 90 to 100% fatality rates in pneumonic plague. So it is very serious and devastating, obviously, to lose an Arizonan to this, to the family and the community, especially in a relatively small community like Flagstaff. But it's also, it's incredibly rare, and most importantly, our health officials need to understand and be able to look for it. That's our physicians and our nurses, as well as the public health departments.
What is it?
I have to throw one thing out there. I was just going to mention, and also our veterinary community, because we do see it showing up in our pets sometimes, and our pets can get really sick, and they can make us sick too. We can get pneumonic plague from cats, and that's happened in the past. So it's kind of everybody working together just to make sure that we don't have these cases or limit them to as few as possible.
And as I understand it, David, the short, not answer, but if you do have cats, one, don't let them run outside, but two, make sure they get good flea treatment, because if there's a bad guy in all this, it seems to be the fleas.
Yeah, especially if you live up in the northern part of the state, absolutely make sure your cats are, you know, flea collar or somehow treated for fleas, because that is how cats can get it and also bring fleas into the house. That's possible. But cats also get it from eating rodents, you know, and outdoor cats, they can get it from eating an infected rodent and then get very sick. So it's you know, something for pet owners to know about, the veterinary community, our medical community, and our public health community.
David, what is it that makes northern Arizona, northern New Mexico so special or perhaps so cursed that this is endemic to that part of the country? Is it the prairie dogs, or do you know what the answer is to that?
Yeah. Good question. You know, it's really interesting. This is a relative newcomer to North America. In fact, probably the very earliest that, well, I know the very earliest detection of plague in Arizona was in the 1930s. This came across into California at the turn of the last century from some sailing ships, probably from Hong Kong, where we were seeing plague outbreaks. And then it's got into local communities and local rodent communities in California, and just over a few decades started to work its way east and made it into Arizona and then New Mexico, Colorado. It turns out that the rodent flea cycle, the species of rodents, including prairie dogs, and the fleas that they have, the very specific fleas, are really good for maintaining plague in the environment. And it's just kind of set up a new natural endemic location in the Southwest. And it's not going away, but thankfully it's really rare for us to come in contact. And we can be on the lookout for it and reduce our risk.
Yeah, and David, I don't want to cause a panic out there, particularly for folks like me that just, you know, just kind of freak out. But the initial symptoms... Mm-hmm. Could be almost anything. It could be flu. It could be a bad cold. There's a one thing, though, that maybe if it were to trip a switch in your mind where people really should go to their physician and say, hey, can you take a look at this?
Yeah, so let me just mention one thing real quick. Let's signs and symptoms of the environment. So one of the things we do in northern Arizona is always on the lookout for things like prairie dog die-offs. Mm-hmm. Because plague can rip through a prairie dog colony really quickly, and then all of a sudden, within a week, you wouldn't see any prairie dogs standing. And that's a really good sign and symptom that plague is in the environment.
Okay.
But when we're talking about with humans, yeah, the general flu-like symptoms are the first thing that you would see after maybe a flea bite that could be, you know, 3 to 5 days. You start to feel that way. And then what's happening is the plague bacteria works its way into the lymph system and starts to build up in the lymph node, and you get a very swollen, painful lymph node, what we call a bubo. And that is the telltale sign. You start getting a very swollen lymph node, absolutely 100% tell your doctor.
Okay, David, I tell you, we've got to take a break. When we come back, I'd like to chat a little bit about COVID because we've had some issues here locally with that. So, ladies and gentlemen, Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. We're speaking with David. I'm just going to call you David from the TGen organization. We'll be right back.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities, the The News and Suns media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill. We're talking with David Ingelthaler. I got it better that time, David, who's a professional, works in the sector of immunology and genomics. And David, as I understand, the reason I'm here today is because the normal host, Bill, you know, God bless his heart, he's down with a bout of COVID. And there's at least a couple other people that I know of that are also out of the picture right now because of COVID. Is there, I've heard that there's an alert in California. Have we got a new variant running around out there in our communities?
Yeah, well, the answer is probably yes. Okay. And we do track these variants still, just to continue to watch the evolution of this particular virus, which has been so fascinating. We've really settled into the normal endemic state of this coronavirus. It's adapted to us, and it's adapted to responding to our immune system. And the trick here is that it keeps just allowing mutations to occur in the spike protein gene. Right? And we've heard a lot about the spike protein. Mm-hmm. And so that's the part of the virus that actually interacts with human cells. So if we just get just one or two mutations, that's enough in that gene to evade the antibodies that we developed from the last infection we had or from the last vaccination we may have gotten. So the virus is always staying two steps ahead of us. Our vaccine is usually one step behind, and therefore we're not going to get in front of this thing. We will continue to see us get these bad colds, which by and large is mostly the outcome of the COVID virus now, which is, you remember we started talking about Omicron a couple of years back. That's all we have anymore. It's Omicron. It's just different flavors of this, which is thankfully the mildest version of this virus that we saw since the pandemic. But it does keep changing enough that we're going to continue to have cases.
So has it, again, I'm not edumacated like you, but has it been getting less severe? You know, 'cause before it was fatal and now it's like a bad cold.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So the big change when Omicron came about was that there was enough significant changes in that it became really adapted to infecting our upper respiratory cells and actually doesn't like to infect the lower respiratory cells where we get all the really scary outcomes. So upper respiratory, then that's really, you know, the upper chest and your nasal pharynx gets easily infected and easily spread between people, but very much more mild outcomes. We still have serious outcomes from people who are, you know, still high risk, especially people over 75. But thankfully, pretty much everybody on the planet has some level of immunity. That also helps reduce the overall risk of death from this virus.
Well, I know, God bless him, Bill is absolutely miserable. So I assume all the normal protocols, safety protocols apply. You know, wash your hands.
What we recommended is the same things that we should be doing for all these kind of cold and flu-like viruses. If you're feeling sick, do exactly what Bill is doing. You stay home. You don't go out and infect others. You recover, so then you can get back into society as quickly as you can. And hopefully that's only for most people, it's a day or two that they're really symptomatic. Certainly washing your hands is always good. Don't be hanging around a lot of sick people, especially if you're at high risk. These are things that we would do for the regular cold. That's what we need to do for this version of COVID moving forward.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, pay attention because, as I understand it, David, you were one of the people that helped develop the FDA allowed diagnostic test for COVID. So you know of which you speak.
We did. We developed one at TGen, and I just got to mention real quickly too. I wear two hats these days, although that might not be great for Wildcat Country. I have a Sun Devil hat. I run a program at Arizona State University called the Health Observatory. What we're trying to do actually is bring all the universities together, and places like TGen, so that we can bring these great resources in Arizona to respond to the day-to-day problems we have, but also be ready for and respond to the large-scale emergencies such as that COVID was, several years ago.
David, on behalf of all the Buckmaster Show listeners, I just want to share with you that we're a forgiving bunch, and we know that sometimes people make the wrong life choices. So the Wildcats are prepared to welcome you warmly if you want to, drive an hour and a half. So I got to... Ben gets on my regular show. I get a dumb question every show. So let me ask you this. Given the line of work you're in, when you're at a cocktail party and tell people what is that you do for a living, do they cross the room immediately? Is it just not polite talk?
Actually, some people are fascinated.
Okay.
The simple way to describe what I do is a disease detective, or otherwise known as an epidemiologist. Some people are terrified and don't want to hear about it. So yeah, I frequently don't mention who I am until I know if somebody really wants to talk about the plague or Valley Fever or something.
Given my radio show, American Warrior Radio, I tell you one thing that did terrify me is this recent, these two Chinese nationals who were recently charged with smuggling biological material into the U.S. from the University of Wuhan, which should sound familiar to people given our COVID discussion. How much of a threat is this? And can you speak to what our nation or folks like you or anybody's doing to mitigate it?
Yeah, so we don't know all the details behind that particular situation, but I have to say this probably is more common than we know. And it's not always nefarious. So I'm going to point out there's something that we call dual use research or dual use research of concern, which is DIRC. This is essentially where we have to study some of these bad bugs, right? We try to develop new diagnostics. We try to develop new drugs to be able to respond to them. Sometimes these are bad pathogens for our crops. And I think that's the case here with these two Chinese nationals that were arrested. They were working on a plant pathogen. It's a fungus that infects and kills a lot of crops. So that could be a real significant concern. Now, they could also just been working with the University of Michigan laboratory, to help develop, better ways to treat our crops, as is most of the cases. So there are bad actors out there, no doubt about it. And there's also a lot of sloppiness. So there are regulations, there's a lot of attempts to try to make sure that we're really watching what's coming in and out and what research is happening, but things do slip through the cracks. And sometimes it really is just sloppiness. Sometimes lab leaks do occur, I gotta say. And people move pathogens around because they don't want to have to deal with all the regulations. Okay. So they sneak things through, but maybe they're not trying to do something bad. So we don't know what the situation is here, but it is an ongoing issue of concern for sure.
David, we're kind of running out of time. We got about 3 minutes left, but one of the other questions I wanted to ask, I always feel privileged and grateful to have experts like you come in and be able to pick their brain. This may sound like a dumb question, but are there any new diseases, or are there just diseases that have been around since the dawn of time and we haven't quite put our finger on them?
Great question. I think both of these things are true. Oftentimes we see diseases kind of morph into some different version. So the pathogen may end up causing a new disease. We saw that with monkeypox. When that massive outbreak of monkeypox occurred around the globe, that was because it actually had turned into an STD very strangely and circulated in specific communities around the globe. That was brand new. COVID, this version of the coronavirus that we have been dealing with since 2020, it's different than what we would normally see. Something happened to this and made it really highly infectious and dangerous to humans. That was brand new. We do see things popping out of nature. Now, do we see brand new things usually occurring? That's probably only going to happen if we're really monkeying around in the lab. We can make Frankenstein viruses and whatnot. But oftentimes when we see something new, it's because we're just getting introduced to it for the first time, even though it's been there for eons in the nature.
Got you. So this, and I'll probably get this wrong, David, but this issue with the cattle, and it's not a disease, I think it's a worm. Is it the hookworm? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, you're talking about screwworm.
Screwworm, okay, and that's caused them to shut down some of the imports of cattle from Mexico. So is that something that, I mean, does your organization deal with the worms too or just the viruses?
We do actually study and have worked with parasites in the past. In this particular case, this is one of these kind of slow-moving outbreaks. It's moving north up through Latin America towards the U.S., and we'll see cases occasionally occurring, but we actually have much better control programs than a lot of places in the world, and so we can limit the overall effect. It's pretty gnarly when an animal gets infected. It's essentially a fly larva that gets into the skin, and it just starts to eat away, not to gross everybody out during lunch hour. And occasionally, you have these very rare human infections that way, but that's only in developing countries where you don't have great sanitation, we don't have good agricultural controls. Gotcha. So I don't see it as being a massive risk for the U.S.
Gotcha. Well, David Ingolthalter, it's been a pleasure having you on the Buckmaster Show. I'd love to, as soon as I'm done here, I'm going to go visit the U of A and see if we can start that campaign to have you move TGen down to Tucson.
No, that sounds great. I got to say, my son does go to school down there, so U of A gets more of my money than the other universities.
Fair enough. Well, my family's a divided family at Thanksgiving, too. So, David, thank you for your time.
it's been good chatting, Ben.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia, sitting in for Bill in the Green Thing Socolo Village Studios. It looks like the monsoons appear to be firmly here. We'll be talking more about that, but it's also a great time to take advantage of that beautiful fresh rain and put some new plants in the ground. Visit our friends at Green Things. They've got 13 acres of everything you could want. Also a friendly staff with some of the best advice in town. You can find Green Things on River Road, just west of Brandy Fenton Park. While you're there, check out the imported furniture and art at Socolo Village. They've got some beautiful stuff down there. You can find both on the web at greenthings.com or socolovillage.com. Socolo is spelled Z-O-C-A-L-O. Don't forget the Buckmaster Live Line, 790-2040. Presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. I don't know about you, but Laura and I got our first real amount of rain last night and this morning, and you know you're a real desert rat when that's cause for, you know, popping open the champagne and celebrating it. Now to joining us to talk about the late arriving monsoons and other related phenomena is a regular Buckmaster Show guest, Dr. Zach Guido. Zach is with the Arizona Institute for Resilience. Zach, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Ben. Nice to meet you.
Now, I tell you, with all due respect, I've been known to joke with people that I think the job of a meteorologist in Tucson is probably the easiest job in the world, because 98% of the time you say it's going to be sunny and warm. Yeah. Sunny and warm.
But yeah, we have some interesting weather here, though, and the monsoon brings it, and thank God it came, right?
Yeah, I was telling you on the break that I've been here 46 years, and it used to be you could set your watch by the monsoons, but the last couple seasons have been really squirrely, really different. I mean, it's been hotter than normal in the summers. I don't recall, in that all that time I've been here, I don't recall a 113 degree day ever.
Yeah. You know, the monsoon's hard. It's hard on our memory because we have this recency bias where we go back and like the big events, the big disappointing events, sort of take larger importance. And for that matter, the big rainfall years as well. I mean, in the last so the monsoon itself is inherently extremely variable from year to year, within seasons, week to week. So it's a hard thing to actually wrap your head around. But you're right in the sense that, I mean, you look at the last 5 years, including this year, and we have had a whiplash. We have 2020 was historically dry, like top five dry for our monsoon, the Southwest monsoon, right? So I'm talking here basically Arizona and New Mexico. And yeah, go ahead.
When you say historically, how far back are we going?
Well, our instrumental records, like I go back 1950, but we have some historical records, like actual thermometers and rain gauges that go back like a little bit over 100 years, 110 years. So it's site dependent. A lot of more stations became online around 1950, so that's a sort of like rule of thumb that I use. So top five, 2020 was terrible, but then 2021 and 2022 was exceptional for here in Tucson and across the Southwest. I believe 2021 July, we ended up having something like 9 inches of rain just in that month. It was the wettest month on record. So really good, vigorous monsoon. I mean, it looked like tropical areas out when you're driving around. Fast forward to 23 and 24, the last 2 years, and they've been, as you said off air, like very disappointing. My house actually did okay last year. And there's also a lot of spatial variability, but by and large, the last 2 years have been bad. And then this year, so let me say a little bit more of a nuance with last year. We had this like really interesting tropical storm right around June 15th that pushed a bunch of moisture into our region and really like started the monsoon historically earlier. Historically, it's around July 1 to July 4. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, it's come on as late as, July 15th and probably even a little bit later than that. And that's by like sort of traditional definitions of the monsoon onset, judging by the amount of moisture in the atmosphere, and not like now we just use a static June 15th to September 30th. But yeah, it's been very variable and sort of hard to wrap your head around. This monsoon came in with a whimper, but thank God, like last night and yesterday was absolutely fantastic.
I was communicating with Bill before I came on the air, and he says they're close to 3.5 inches on the northwest side.
Oh, so he's in the foothills. Yeah, there were some rain gauge observations up there. Yeah, in the 3 inches.
So I do, and I want to talk a little bit more about what, from a practical standpoint, what it is that your organization does, Zach. But I do, in fact, I just came from a briefing this morning. I do regular briefings out at Davis Mountain Air Force Base twice a month. It's sort of a welcome to Tucson Chamber of Commerce sort of thing. And, you know, I tell them, I said, look, if you've never been in this part of the world before, we're talking, winters, no big deal. You know, wrap your pipes if it's going to freeze.
Right.
Summers, though, this is honest to goodness. I think I may not have this number exactly right, Zach, but I think there was last year 160 heat-related fatalities in Pima County.
That's not surprising.
Yeah, 114 degrees. That's serious, folks. You know, I know you're all fit. You just aced your PT test, but don't go out jogging when it's 110.
Yeah, heat's one of our hazards here. For sure, heat's probably the most severe in May, June, even in July and August. Outside, when the monsoon goes on breaks, it can, what was it, last week, I think it got up to 112, 113. Yeah. So yeah, the heat is something that we have to contend with, and the people that live here for a while sort of know that, and it's the people that come in here, you know, on vacation. I don't know why you'd come during the summer for vacation, but people do come.
That's why folks can get real screaming deals at the Western La Paloma and Los Ventana Canyon, right?
That's right. That's right.
So we've got, in your bio or looking at your website, it says that your research focuses on technical weather and climate information in decision-making.
Yeah.
So for a not very educated guy like me, explain to me what the practical ramification of that is. So are you researching to try and help us mitigate things like the horrible tragedies that are happening in Texas now? Or are you talking about design standards for homes so people aren't dying in their trailer park or all of
the
above?
More the former.
Okay.
Yeah, so my research focuses on like how people understand and use technical information at the weather timescale. So when I say weather, it's like basically from now, the moment, to up to maybe 7 to 10 days. So it's things that are going on in the atmosphere in the near term. And then we have longer time scales that get into sort of sub-seasonal. So a couple weeks to, you know, a month maybe, and then seasonal from months to maybe up to a year, and then longer term climate projections and that sort of thing. And different organizations and different sectors make every single day risk management decisions that are based on their expectations of what the future conditions will be like. So I work a lot with small scale farmers, largely in the Caribbean and Africa, and they're making decisions about what to plant, what seed variety to plant. So that's like a seasonal decision. If they knew something about what the season was going to be like, well, is it going to be a better than average year? They might plant a different kind of variety than if they thought it was going to be dry, and they might plant a more drought tolerant variety. And there's trade-offs with productivity related to this. They're also like making decisions about when to apply, you know, inputs like fertilizers. Mm-hmm. They don't want to do it right before a heavy rain, because then that all get, a lot of it gets washed away. So, and that's sort of at the weather time scale. So, and then there's crazy things that happen about like technical information. It's not just about the credibility and the accuracy of the information. It's how people perceive that information, who the messenger is. Like, do they understand it? Like, a lot of times climate weather information is it's communicated in sort of abstract mathematical language, and people can't understand what that means, or they think they understand it and it means something very different to them than it does to actually like a forecaster. And this happens all over the world. It happens here. Like, I could probably say, what is 50% chance of a percent of precipitation mean to you? And it might be actually slightly different. You might think it means something that it doesn't mean.
That gets me excited because normally it's 0%.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's a nice emotional response, and we imbue that kind of meaning into it.
Well, I smiled, Zach, because my dad was a farmer before he became a pastor, and I was just sharing him at dinner a couple weeks ago. I said, you know, I this summer, I finally feel like I understand how the Tohono O'odham and the Pascua Yaqui felt around this time of year, where I'm sitting there on the back porch, I'm looking at the thunderheads develop over the Catalinas, and I'm just praying, is this going to be the day?
Yeah.
Is this going to be the day we finally get some precipitation and it's going to help, you know, water my squash in my backyard garden? And he kind of chuckled about that too, and he says, yeah, people don't understand how much farmers really, you don't have control in many ways because you're dependent upon the weather.
Yeah, they're incredible risk managers. Absolutely. So they're contingency planning, they're making decisions to minimize that risk or maximize it. Some are risk averse, some hedge their risk, and you know, it's quite an interesting phenomenon to work with them. And they also have their weather people, you know, and they have very sophisticated ways of understanding what the future may hold. I remember when I was working in Jamaica and we were talking with some coffee farmers, and they're like, yeah, every time I look over that mountain and a cloud peaks over there and low on the mountain, like it's gonna rain.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, a lot of that is actually tried and true, right? Yeah. Like, so,
Well, I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, this is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. We're talking with Dr. Zach Guido. You're tuned into Monsoon Talk here on the Buckmaster Show. But if you're a Tucsonan, you know how important that is to all of us. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Buehler-Garcia, guest hosting for Bill. We hope he feels better very soon. If you'd like to interact with us, give us a call, 790-2040. I mean, you heard Dr. Guido say it just now on the air that, you know, some of the, we're loving the monsoons right now, but sometimes that period between the monsoon rains can get pretty hot. It's a great time to consider planning a visit to our friends in Silver City, New Mexico. They're at 6,000 feet, so they're a lot cooler. They're right in the heart of a beautiful 3-million-acre Gila National Forest. Lots of things to do, both in the forest and in Silver City itself. It's a small town with a really big culture, and they're always waiting to welcome us with open arms. Begin planning your weekend getaway by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. We're chatting with Dr. Zach Guido of the Arizona Institute for Resilience. Zach, I'm just curious, why is your institute in Tucson? Is there a reason or not? Because, I mean, we don't really have a lot of weather phenomena in Arizona.
Well, we have a lot of really talented researchers at the University of Arizona. And I mean, the AIR, as we affectionately know it, Arizona Institute for Resilience. I mean, resilience is this concept that is pretty encompassing of a lot of different things, a lot of different disciplines like climate, like hydrology, like a lot of social science, decision support, risk management, governance, public policy. I mean, it really is an integrator, and, you know, it's also, you know, some of the world's, our society's, you know, most difficult challenges, you know, require thinking about things in an interdisciplinary way. And so we actually have quite a bit of talented people who work on climate-related, disaster-related issues. So, you know, AIR is a pretty good place to be, I think.
I've got a... help pay for my U of A education fighting wildfires for the Forest Service. And we just had just this horrible, horrible tragedy up in the Grand Canyon with that historic lodge and, you know, 60 other buildings just gone. Yep. And is that something else? Does your organization work with those types of people on the risk management?
Yep.
When you talk about that short term, 7 to 10 days, because, yep, you know, I've been on a fire and, you know, we're waiting for the slurry drop or something like that. Yep. And knowing that we might get some rain sure would have helped.
Yeah, so there are a lot of people at U of A who do fire-related research. And just to bring this back to the monsoon, I mean, the other thing that's really important about the monsoon is that it tends to quell our fire season. Mm-hmm. And it's not surprising then that, you know, there's, you know, elevated fire risk in a period where the monsoon has sort of come on late. I mean, it came on late for much of Arizona. It was sort of more vigorous in New Mexico for the first half of July than it was here. But, you know, we've basically had I think at the airport here in Tucson, we had one other event, small event, and there hasn't been much rain in many parts of Arizona. And so you wait for those real, consecutive days of rainfall to soak the landscape, to wet it, to like reduce that fire risk. But yeah, that's a real tragedy. That building's been around for a while. I hated to see that.
I was up in the Apache Sitgreaves up on the Arizona-New Mexico border, and the most dangerous period, other than September, October in California, was when you knew the monsoons were coming in, but we'd get what we called dry storms.
Yep, dry lightning.
Where you got the lightning strikes, but not the water.
Yep.
So then, of course, that
June, late June.
Yeah, that hits a tree and starts. I mean, there's sometimes we might be working 50 fires on that forest. Now, they weren't all huge. I mean, it might be 5 acres here, 100 acres there, but that's good to know. So, I mean, how based on, because, I mean, like today, this feels more like a winter rainstorm.
Yeah, doesn't it? It was nice.
We don't have the high winds, you know, that kind of stuff. Is this a preview of what we can see? Is that a fair question? Or are we going to go back to the traditional rattle, boom, bang thunderstorms?
Yeah, so this was an interesting event. There was moisture around, and there was things aloft. Features aloft in our atmosphere that helped generate the uplift of the moisture from the near surface that really kicked off the storms. And then a lot of those storms formed. And then when they sort of cluster together, we call them sort of a mesoscale convective system. And a lot of them together can actually begin to generate their own sort of atmospheric dynamics that sort of perpetuate the rainfall. So at my house, we had like 3 or 4 different episodes, and that is not very typical. This kind of a setup happens. So it's not like unprecedented. To say that it's, I hope we have another event like this. This was a really big event. Like I think.
What's what we're experiencing now?
Yeah, like okay. 1 to 2 inches of rain, some 3 inches, some a little bit less across the metropolitan area. They didn't move up north or west to Phoenix, so it was pretty localized. You know, after these days, like last night, we tend to have a down day. Moisture is still around, but we don't have that. There's cloud cover, really takes the top off the temperatures, really suppresses the ability of the sun to generate convection. We might see, however, if that moisture stays around, more storms firing up maybe tomorrow or the next day. And, you know, every single, you know, monsoon season, we're going to get these ebbs and flows of moisture in the area. And that has to do with the sort of, for the most part, the wobble of like this high pressure ridge. Like when it moves to our north, it allows moisture from the south to move in, and we have more of an sort of an advantageous setup for monsoon. And sometimes it moves south, and we're in sort of westerly flow or northwesterly flow, and that air, dry, warmer air from the northwest comes in, and it sort of shuts it down. And so we have those booms and bust period every single monsoon season. What separates good from bad is just how many of those goods we get and how many of the bads we get, really.
Is there anything I can do, like, I don't know, putting tinfoil on my roof or washing the car every day to make sure the rain hits my house?
Oh, man, I have thought about geoengineering so many times. Like, the last 2 weeks, I've been, like, throwing geoengineering ideas to my colleagues, being like, how can we put up, like, a big solar shield and, like...
Right.
Focus down energy on Arizona and New Mexico.
Well, when I do these briefings, I tell people that Arizona gets an annual precipitation rate of about 10 to 12 inches a year. Is that still valid figure?
Yeah, and it depends, like more as you go up in elevation. So tops of Mount Lemmon, for example, and Rincon Peak, like much more than that. Like and the airport, I think it's about 12 inches, and it's partitioned about 6 for the monsoon and 6 for the winter. So, you know, it's nice. We actually have two wet seasons. Mm-hmm. But it's also not a lot of rainfall in the desert. So, you know, if you get, you know, a pretty bad monsoon or a bad winter, it can really stress the ecosystem out, like really dry it out, like make it prone for, you know, wildfire risk or, you know, cause issues related to water supply. So a lot of like impacts happen just from small changes in rainfall because we don't get a lot of rainfall.
Yeah. And so what period do you and your colleagues say, okay, this was the monsoon season and we're cutting it off here and we're measuring and seeing how much it
was? So the easy way to do it now is June 15th to September 30th. And that's just like the National Weather Service did that. 10 years ago, just to ease the communication challenges and to bring to awareness like the hazards and when the hazard, people should watch out for the hazards. We can, as scientists, we can quibble about, well, was this the monsoon? If rainfall came in June 27th, like we can quibble about, well, was that really a monsoon setup or was that just like a transition season storm more reminiscent of like late March, right? So historically there's, you know, other definitions that have been more, let's say, meteorologically inclined have used the 3 consecutive days of moisture, water vapor in the atmosphere, you know, crossing a threshold as the cutoff. And that I think is a little bit more in tune to monsoon dynamics than obviously the static dates are. But they both serve a purpose.
Well, Zach, this has been very educational. I appreciate you sharing it with our listeners. I hope the listeners get as excited about monsoons. And I'm pretty sure if anyone's been here over 10 years, they get excited about monsoons like I do. And then, folks, just a reminder, you know, turn around, don't drown. I mean, when the sign there says don't enter when flooded, I don't care if you got a big, bad, brand new Jeep. We've already had one fatality of someone being washed away in the Rito this year. So these kinds of storms, when it's kind of a slower, softer rain, don't think that doesn't mean flooding. I mean, the ground still gets saturated. So just, you know, keep your wits about you and be very careful when you're out there. Zach, once again, thank you for joining us here on the Bill Buckmaster Show.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon. Thanks to Tom. Rosemary and the other folks of the Buckmaster Show team, and of course the team here at Bustos Media for allowing us to present this programming. Don't forget, lots of great local news and talk here on KVOI. You've got the morning shows, and frankly, I'll be very biased. There's some great programming on the weekends as well. Check it out. You can find these archive episodes at thebuckmastershow.com. Ladies and gentlemen, take care and be safe out there.